Hello, welcome to Every Woman. I'm Fiona Nowling, and I'm here in the studio with my wife, Una.
Hello.
And on the soundboard today, we have Anthony.
Hello.
So what have you all been doing this week? Anything fun?
Well, it was a holiday on Monday. I seem to recall sleeping at some point, too.
That was a little bit of fun. In urgent news for all the listeners out there that have been tracking, I've had a couple emails, actually. My tummy piercing is doing nice, thank you.
Oh, and thinking of fun things, it is the Crossroads Musical Festival today.
Yes, all day, in fact.
And the weather is supposed to be good this evening, finally.
That is really good.
So anyone wanting to go out, it's supposed to be really good this evening.
We have much more information on that at kkfi.org, our website, and we hope to see you all out there.
So today we'd like to welcome Athena Horton from Louise Hyacinth Productions, a production company dedicated to creating original productions that are focused on social justice and awareness. They have a show next week called Mirrors, which aims to raise awareness about eating disorders. Also joining us today is Robin Nazarian, who is playing the role of a trans woman in the show. Athena, Robin, welcome to Every Woman.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you.
So can you tell us and our listeners a bit about yourselves?
I guess I'll go first. I'm Athena. I am from the East Coast, and when I was living in Boston, I literally woke up one day, and I was in bed, and I said, you know what, I want to make a show about my life, and so I just decided to do it, and that's kind of how my production company got started. I did a musical about mental illness in Boston, and we workshopped the show, and I commissioned people to write the book and the musical, and it happened, and it all came together, and it was really cool, and I realized that I could do it again. And actually, the show is having its world premiere in Boston in March, so it's really exciting to see that, like, I can get stuff like this done. I can talk more about social awareness and make it more prevalent in theater. It's very exciting.
A little about you, Robin?
So, a little bit about me. I have moved around a lot in my life, and recently I moved to Kansas City from Cleveland, Ohio, and right now I'm just like, you know, I make a lot of music, and I do a lot of fixing things in community activism, which, like, right now we're focusing on a house, like, we're repairing it, so, like, basically it's like, it's about to be, like, condemned, like, that's how bad this house is.
Yeah.
And so we just, weekly we fix it up, and
what
weekly
do you,
we play music.
What are you gonna do with the house when it's fixed up? Who will live there?
Okay, so wonderful is, we have a friend, he goes by Bodacious, but we call him Bo for short, and he bought the house because it's right across the street from his mother's house. And he is, like, he is of retirement age, and so he decided that he wanted to live very close to his mother, so he could take care of her. And they live right by 71 Highway, so it's in a neighborhood that's, like, being gentrified right now. So what we're doing to fix this house is keep him from having to sell his house, and keep his mother from having to sell her house. And so that's the goal, is to fix it before it gets taken.
Oh, that's really wonderful.
Now, I have to ask, both of you somehow ended up in Kansas City from elsewhere. So how did you end up in Kansas City?
Yeah, what did you do wrong?
All right. If you like the place, what did you do right?
Living in Cleveland, Ohio is a pretty bad time. I had just gotten out of a really rough relationship, and the job market wasn't that great, especially as I am a high school dropout. So, like, that made it especially hard living in the inner city to get a job. Because in the inner city, there's an abundance of people looking for jobs and not as many jobs to go around. But I had family here in Kansas City, so I moved here in hopes that I would be able to find something, and I did.
That's great. Now, what brought you here from Boston?
Well, Robin and I have sort of a similar story. I had also just gotten out of a relationship in Boston, and I ended up having to move, and I didn't really have anywhere to go. So the options were to, like, live with my mother or one of my brothers just while I was in transition. And so I ended up coming out here because I have a brother out here who has two kids, two lovely children. And I just, you know, kind of forged my path here. I found a job at Truman Medical Center, so I'm a caseworker there. And I just started finding my way in the theater scene around here, too.
And you said before that you just woke up and decided to do a play about your life.
Yeah.
So had you been in theater before that, or did you just start from scratch with that idea?
Well, I actually had been working for a theater company on the South Shore of Boston. And, you know, I was, like, the in-house costume designer. I was the school manager. And I did a lot of stuff. I was really involved. And I also did theater in my senior year of college. So I was involved in the community quite a bit. I did some professional shows in Boston, some community theater shows in Boston. So, yeah.
Because when you first said it, I had this vision of someone who'd never done anything in a theater, thinking, I can do this, and then having to start from scratch with no contacts or anything.
I don't know how to produce a play, but I did sleep at a Holiday Inn Express.
Well, then you're ready for touring, right?
Yes.
So, your production company, though, isn't called Athena, it's Louise Hyacinth. Mm-hmm. So where did the name come from for that?
So Louise Hyacinth is actually my middle name, but I was named for my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, and so that was kind of in honor of her. I had never met her, but I've heard so many incredible stories about what a strong and powerful woman she was. So it's a nod off to the woman that I never met but want to be like.
That's really cool. So does that also reflect your decision to make your company be about social awareness and social justice?
Yeah. So she did a lot, and her mother also did a lot for everyone. I mean, my mom is from Jamaica, and so my mother was raised by a lot of people, including her grandmother, and she was poor, but she had tons of kids running in out of her house that most of them weren't even hers or related to her. And she just made sure everyone went to bed with a full stomach and took care of them all. And so I think it's really important to honor my grandmother and my great-grandmother who did wonderful things like that. And so, I mean, that's fighting for social justice in itself, you know, and that's a lived way of doing it. What I really want to do is spread more awareness through theater, because it's such a powerful tool. When you go into a theater and see a show that is moving, it inspires you to go out and change the world, you know. So that's what I want to do, you know. I want to get people's stories out there that people don't hear. Let people, even if they don't go out and try and change things, they'll at least have a more open mind, and they will be more knowledgeable about other people's experiences.
I think that's a wonderful goal.
Yes, it is.
Now, how do you get your message across and still be entertaining? Because some authors, they start out writing really entertaining books, then they get socially aware, mm-hmm. and their books turn into unreadable screeds. So how do you strike a happy balance?
What I do is I work with local writers. And so as they're writing, I help to kind of form their, or guide them through the writing process and give them guidance. And so what we do is we just try to loop humor throughout the whole piece. Because when you just get dark, like, it can get really dark and people are like, oh my gosh, I feel horrible.
Yes.
And yeah, you know. And so we have to, we just have to find a balance between humor and, you know, the serious topics. And that's how people continue to want to stay engaged and not feel terrible about themselves after they leave the theater.
Yeah, I can understand that. I watched the three billboards outside Billings, Missouri, mm-hmm. and Una was forced to watch it with me. And I thought it had lots of leavening humor in it, and she'd sat there going, this is awful. I don't want to be watching this.
It was just that I've seen or experienced so many situations like that, you know, through reporting in the news and everything. It just seemed really, well, we don't need to talk about that.
So maybe perhaps a touch more humor for you. So your first one that you did that was really social justice was about your own life, and you said about mental illness.
Yeah, so the female lead in the story was essentially my story, and then we also introduced, she ended up in an inpatient mental health facility, and she ended up meeting these three other characters. So she had, like, depression, she struggled with self-injury, and, you know, she tried to kill herself in the show. But so when she was in the inpatient hospital, she met a boy with anorexia, a guy who had bipolar 1 disorder, and a woman who had PTSD. And so we hear, it wasn't just my story we heard, it was the story of three other people. And the way we went about creating the script is, everything was based on interviews of actual people struggling through what these people were going through. And so we utilized real stories and turned them into characters and dramatized it a bit, because obviously you have to keep it entertaining. But yeah, that's kind of what happened. And I think it's what's really important. What I tried to impress upon people is, you know, these aren't just fictional characters. These are actually based on real people and their experience.
I think it's interesting that you chose to have a woman with PTSD, because most of the time that PTSD gets mentioned in journalism and in our society, it's usually associated with ex-military people coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. And statistically speaking, it's more common for them to be male.
Yeah, so one of the things that was really important is that we wanted to defeat stigma. So that's why we had a male with an eating disorder and a woman with PTSD, because we see that in real life.
That's great. Thank you. We will be right back with our guests, but we have a short station break to take now.
Jaws of Justice Radio investigates how we can achieve justice from a system of laws deeply rooted in economic, political, and social inequality. We strive to dispel misconceptions created by the news and entertainment industries, as well as the fear-mongering of the political system. Listen in as we search out the tools needed to make our community a more just environment. Jaws of Justice Radio, Mondays at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
After the Harvest, a nonprofit volunteer hunger relief organization, is looking for volunteers to help pick fruits and vegetables to feed people in need. Call 816-921-1903 or go to our website, AfterTheHarvestKC.org, for more information. This message, a public service of 90.1 KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Hello and welcome back to Every Woman. I'm here in the studio with our guest Athena Horton from Louise Hyacinth Productions and Robin Nazarian, who's starring in their next play coming up next week. We were just talking about reversing stigma by switching the genders of people that you expect to have certain conditions. So could you tell me a little more about that?
Specifically to that the play that we
that,
did?
Yes.
Or the musical?
Yeah.
So really, with stigma, you know, it's something that really keeps a lot of people down and keeps people from getting help. So one of the things I wanted to do was, you know, with that show, we impressed upon people that it's okay to get help. And that's, I mean, you're really going to have a difficult time if you don't, you know. And not reaching out for help can end someone's life. So that was one way we try to defeat stigma is switching the genders. Another way is targeting the mental illness themselves and stigma that's surrounded by those. Like a lot of people, I think a majority of people around think that if you're bipolar, you are angry one minute and happy the next. But really, you know, there are longer periods of time of mania and long periods of time of depressive episodes. And so just seeing the character being portrayed on stage in that way was one way that we sort of defeated like stigma and just the general misconceptions around bipolar disorder.
Yes, and I think a lot of people think automatically that if you have any sort of mental condition that you're automatically dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to see people interacting even when in a depressive or a manic episode would have been a good sign.
Yeah.
And in the case of bipolar individuals, some of them can be some of the top performing people with a hidden side to it, people that are always there, always on, and really active in some ways, but no one sees the quiet times when they're alone and everything comes crashing down on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you said that's actually going to have its world premiere in Boston soon?
Yes, it's going to have its world premiere in March. It's going to be at Pariah Theater Company. It's actually a theater company run by someone that I worked with a lot in Boston, and they also focus on social justice theater, so they are in their opening season, which is really, really cool, and I'm very excited to be a part of that. They asked me to do my show. So that was really encouraging.
A command performance, as it were.
Yes. I'm very excited. I'm definitely going to go out and see it.
And you've got family back there, probably, so you get to visit all your old friends and everything.
Well, I have college friends in Boston. I'm actually from New Jersey, kind of by Philly. So I'll have to stop there, too, on my way.
Yeah, because it's East Coast, so, I mean, you're obviously only a stone's throw apart. Because the country's so tiny.
Yes.
Right, I'll tell you about my one-hour Uber ride from Boston Logan to Harvard that one time.
Yeah, that's just a poke, really, more at my mother, because if there's a report of a tornado, like, on the far side of Kansas, she phones up to check if we're okay, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Not that she's listening.
Well, she lives in the UK, so it's like, I saw there was a snowstorm in Alaska. Are you doing all right in Kansas?
She's not quite that bad most of the time.
She's worse other ways.
Oh, yeah, much worse in other ways.
Moving on.
Yes, moving swiftly on to social justice that does not involve dealing with my mother. So what gave you the idea for this show? Is it partly because you had an anorexic character in that one that you wanted to investigate eating disorders more?
No, actually. So I co-produced a show at the Fringe Festival last summer, and there was a young woman, Caitlin Gould, who came out to see the show, and we talked a little bit. I think our conversation started because she told me she liked my dress or something like that. And we just talked more, and she said she was an actress in the city, and you know, I got to know a little bit more about her, and she started telling me about her piece, and I was like, I just did a piece in Boston. Oh my gosh, what a small world. And so she had, what her piece started out as was a thesis project, and I think she said it was her master's program, and it was about her journey with her eating disorder, and there were themes that kind of compared it to Alice in Wonderland, which was really cool, the way those things tied together.
Could you give us an example? Because that's intriguing.
Oh, goodness. You know what? I honestly didn't see the first product. I only saw her first script. Hmm. But we started working together soon after. I was like, let's meet up and talk about this. Like, maybe we can work together. We'll see if our visions align and everything like that. And we met up and we talked. And I was like, yes, I will definitely, like, help you on this journey. Because she really wanted to turn it into a play. And it was originally supposed to be a one-woman show, but then she realized as she was writing that more stories needed to be told. And so she interacts with, you know, a group therapy, and we see all of their stories from all of their different walks of life. So this project is really, really exciting and really cool, and I think that we're going to change a lot of minds about what eating disorders look like and how they actually affect people.
Yes, I know that the media coverage of it is often like actors or actresses recovering from things and having been sent to rehab, or it's really nasty, sarcastic jokes on things like Family Guy about people eating and then going and throwing up.
Yeah, we often see caricatures of people throughout media, you know, and we don't really see the real thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of comments about the Big Bang Theory as having a caricature of an autistic person, but carefully not actually ever acknowledging that they're autistic so that they can still use shorthands and stereotypes, but avoid getting slammed too hard for it.
The real thing is folks like a gal I met last night at Missy's who said not only had she not eaten all day because she thought she was too fat and she was only about 110 pounds, but she was only drinking straight vodka because it had less calories.
Oh,
that is wild.
And, yeah, that's one little glimpse of some of the reality.
Yeah.
So you said that there's lots of other stories and lots of other characters, so tell us about the characters in the play.
Okay, I can't give away too much because I don't want to spoil the story.
No spoilers.
But we encounter various types of eating disorders. So there are a few characters that experience anorexia. Bulimia is addressed. Binge eating disorder is addressed, which is actually one of the most common eating disorders in the U.S., and it's not really talked about much at all. Mm-hmm. It's actually more common than a lot of medical issues that we see prevalent among the people in the U.S. And then we also see that eating disorders aren't just like one like little box of a thing. You know, there are people who are dealing with anorexia that also dabble in bulimia, or people that kind of dabble in all three types. And that's called EDNOS, eating disorder not otherwise specified. It's like because you kind of go to any extent to not have food, you know? But we also see in the different characters, we have a young Muslim woman and how her life and her faith and her experience is vastly different than everyone else's, and that has affected her eating disorder in a very different way. We see a young black man who's experienced a lot of trauma, and we see his journey. We have a young woman who has binge eating disorder, and she doesn't necessarily have any specific demographic other than it does mention that she is Jewish, but that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with her eating disorder. But we just see her unique experience. We see another young woman's unique experience. We also see Marianne, who Robin plays. We see her experience with being a trans woman and how her journey as a trans woman has affected her eating disorder.
Now, you do something really unusual with this play.
I know, it's shocking, actually.
Yes. One of the roles, as you just said, is a trans woman, and you actually put out a casting call locally to cast a trans woman to play a trans woman. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's a really novel approach. So how did the casting process go for you?
No, that can't happen in Trump's America. No, nothing like that.
I think it's really important to cast people who are trans in trans roles. Most of the time in media, like currently and in the past, we think of a trans woman and we think of a male with wearing heels and really bad makeup and a wig, you know? And that's not the reality of what being a trans person is. And so I want there to be an accurate representation of what being trans is in the show. I don't want to do a disservice to the trans community, you know? And I feel very strongly about that. I mean, another thing is, you know, in acting, whether it's theater or film, a lot of trans people can't get roles because they the casting directors are like, oh, you're trans. We don't really have anything for you. So it's also about giving a level playing field, you know?
Yes. I mean, so many times they hire cis actors to play trans roles, mm-hmm. but somehow it's inconvenient or unconvincing to hire a trans actor to play a cis role.
Yeah, I think it's like one of those things where it's, you know, that stereotype in someone's head that's always being perpetuated. So if like you see a trans female, they're like, oh, you look too feminine. You can't play a trans female. Or like a woman playing, a trans man like coming in for a show to play a trans man. They're like, you look too masculine, you know? So it's a shame. It really is.
If you've ever listened to the Trans Talk edition of the 10th Voice, which the three of us work on, in my monthly news rant, I will single out shows, movies, plays where they are casting cis characters as trans. And I usually have a stock line. I compare it to having, you know, Carrot Top play Nelson Mandela, basically. Because that's how it feels to me when I see it. It's just like, why? You know, there's well more than a million of us. You couldn't find one single transgender person to be a cab driver in your film or whatever. I mean, what?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I think another part of it, in Hollywood at least, is they want someone with a big name to mm-hmm. come to help sell their film. So they're like, oh, we have a trans character that's pretty, like, prevalent in the film, so we're gonna cast a star, you know.
Yeah. And the star to be look, oh, it's really brave of them to represent a trans person, so they're bound to get nominated for an Oscar for this.
Yeah.
But if you have a trans person playing a trans person, it's like, oh, so that's every day for you. Let's not bother to nominate you.
Yeah, and that's so ridiculous. It really is.
There's a lot of that when Jared Leto was playing in Dallas Buyers Club. Many in the trans community were defending it. Oh, but he's so brave for doing this. I'm like, yeah, as opposed to how brave it is to actually be transgender. Wow.
And it's like saying someone's brave for playing that role when everyone knows that isn't them. You might as well say that someone's brave for playing the role of a Nazi in the film, because then people might think they were evil.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like I might get slightly carried away and carried on this test.
Honestly, I think it would make their film better to have mm-hmm. an actual trans person in a trans role, because they understand that experience much more than anyone else would, you know? So they would bring something more to the table that any cis person ever could.
I think we see this in some sort of way of, you know, white supremacist thinking with the furor over the possibility that James Bond might be played by Idris Elba.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's, you know, it really brings people out of the woodwork with all these code words and phrases. Well, Bond was Scottish, so therefore there's no way that he could be black.
Yeah.
I've been to Scotland. There's a lot of people of color in Scotland. I mean.
Yes. As long as they still drank the whiskey and ate the correct brand of kippers and had that true Scottish thing, who cares?
And had that dreadful accent.
Well, for Idris Elba, it would be a dreadful fake accent.
Granted. I don't mean Scottish people have dreadful accents. I meant Sean Connery. So now I'll only get hate mail from the Sean Connery fans instead of all Scotland.
I don't think the Sean Connery fans ought to be listening to a feminist show given his track record of abuse of females.
They're learning. They're learning. And we have to support that.
Well, now we're going to get extra letters given the yes. history.
Moving on.
Yes, swiftly on from hate mail from Sean Connery supporters. Robin, tell us about your experience getting cast in the show and the casting call.
Where did you first see the notice of it, or how did you find out about the opportunity?
So, my thing is, I like to detach from everything because I work two jobs and I do that house project that I've been talking about. as well as being in a band. So I generally listen to the radio, and that's about as like out there as I get. I don't really use a lot of social media, and I don't really like go out much. So I have a handful of friends in various like activist communities. And one of them said, hey, there's this role for a trans woman that I think you should try out for. And I was like, yeah, why not? I'll go for it. And so I got, like, an address and a time. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll be doing that. So I just went to the Kansas City Center for Inclusion, and I auditioned. And it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun auditioning because I've never done any sort of acting beyond my 20 years of acting, of pretending to be a straight guy. So it was interesting to be able to act as a different person who more closely resembled myself.
That's a really good way of putting it. I mean, acting as a straight person, that's how I felt for all of the years that I had to go through presenting as the boy at work, right. You know, even to the point of crying every morning, putting on my suit and tie and looking in the mirror and saying, now we got to remember how boys act. You got to remember how they talk. You drop your voice down. You've got to do this. You've got to stand like this.
And right. I noticed that too. I noticed that last summer I was housing a friend, and I would come home and like my friend would be there. Right. So I'd come from work and I would notice immediately a shift in the way that I talked, and like I definitely like deepened my voice at work so as to like play the role better. My little bit of method acting. And so it was really wild. My experience with it was I would walk with a more masculine gait, I would deepen my voice, and I would probably just ignore conversations rather than involving myself. But that was like when I came out at work, it was like even my friends at work were like, really? We had no idea. We never would have assumed. And I was like, well, surprise, Oscar. Everybody knows a trans person.
Oscar for the performance of a straight person goes to straight cis person goes to.
Well, I think part of it is when your survival, your livelihood, your relationships with others, and even your life, but they all depend upon your level of acting. That really does polish many fine acting talents in you.
That's true.
Sadly, for a lot of people, it's been the role of a lifetime. But hopefully things are changing. I know. I can see you shaking your head. I know where you're shaking your head, but hopefully you'll change back
right
again.
Not changing right now, but we'll see. Anyways.
So after you got cast, you've had plenty of time to read the script and work on it so far. How does that grab you?
So when I first read through the script, there were bits and pieces, and it was kind of like, oh boy, this is going to need a little bit of work. But
from you or from the writer?
Well, from both of us, actually. We pair up oftentimes during rehearsals, and we'll go over different parts of the script, and we'll work on it together. And, you know, I think she has a really, really good, maybe, I don't know the word, like intentions, maybe. So she and I will get together and work and talk, and the script is like, you know, it's coming along really, really wonderfully, I think.
So I know various people in the trans community, and I would say that some of them, at least in the past, have had eating disorders. Mm-hmm. Would that be your experience too?
Yeah, actually, yes. And it's funny that my character has actually the same one as me. So it's been a very kind of interesting few weeks of going and acting out this character who I relate to a little bit more than a lot of actors relate to their characters. So, yeah, it's just been very interesting. But yeah, I would say most of my trans friends, if not like all of them, have struggled with eating disorders in the past or present.
The statistics that I've researched on this for a paper I wrote are that at least 75 to 85% of transgender women have a classifiable eating disorder, and somewhere around 50% to 60% of transgender men. And you know, another friend of me explained it, why she got so thin was actually because she wanted to emphasize or to emphasize her breasts, mm-hmm. so that by being super ultra thin in her waist, it didn't make her look unbalanced. And I right. will confess that I went through that myself for a long time. I felt like I had to be as thin as possible so that mm-hmm. I looked more the shape I was supposed to be. Right. And that did lead to a significant eating disorder that is still a struggle every now and then.
So, you've been working during the rehearsals with the writer, mm-hmm. and the actual performance is next Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And is that still a, more a workshop, or is it a very final product?
It's a stage reading. So, basically, the point of that is so she can see the show. We're going to have a talk back afterward. We'll get feedback from the audience, other theater artists. I've also invited people that work with individuals that have eating disorders. And she's going to just get feedback. And based on that feedback, she will kind of make final edits to the play so that it's ready to be published.
And when it's published, will you also be performing it in its final version later? Or
That is up to the writer. I mean, mm-hmm. I would love to continue to work with her and get her play out there a little more, because I mean, I do have connections on the East Coast, so it would be cool to see it, mm-hmm. you know, coast to coast. That would be amazing. But I think it's really going to depend on where she is and mm-hmm. what she really wants to do with it.
Yes, because obviously it's her work.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's her baby.
Yeah, even if you've co-parented it a little, it definitely hurts.
It's a
yeah.
village.
It's a village.
So one thing that caught my attention is you said you were in a band.
Yes. So my band, I don't want to call them gimmicks, but we've got two kind of like gimmicks. All of us are trans, and we have one trans man, a trans woman, and myself, a non-binary trans feminine person. And so a lot of our music stems, like, lyrically from, like, mental health problems and our daily experiences in the world. There's some political stuff, some, like, social commentary stuff, and the music that we play, I don't really know how to describe it so much. I mean, we kind of use the term punk, like, very, very loosely, because there's a lot of slow stuff, there's a lot of, like, melodic stuff, but then we have other songs that it's just like, here's your three power chords, and we're playing them really fast and really angry. So, actually, yeah, and we're, very soon, we're going to be releasing a handful of songs produced by a friend of mine who is in school right now. And that's one of the projects of our band, Evil Pillows, is to make it as, I don't have good words. We want to, like, reach out to as many, like, community people as possible. And we want to make it as interactive as possible. So we want to have, like, artists, like, local artists, like, going to, like, school or even not going to school, honestly, who will be like, oh, you know, I have a really good idea of what some, like, merchandise could look like. Or people who are into video and they were like, oh, you know what? This song would look really good with a video and I have this idea for it. We want, like, lighting and we want, like, fashion designers, like, honestly, everybody in all works of art. Like, we have friends across that spectrum of art, and so we try to talk to them and include them in our band as much as possible. So we're going to have a handful of songs released fairly soon. Right now, pretty much only our the only recordings that we have right now are live recordings that you know, well,
they have a different kind of energy.
Right, they have a different energy. A little a little bit messier.
Well, you put it together in a compilation called Uncut or Raw. Or
of course, that's the money grab way to do it. That's what we're going for.
Yeah, I guess there's a money grab in there because I heard the word merchandising. Although that works very well if you're doing Kickstarters as gifts.
So the name of the band is Evil Pillows.
We are called Evil Pillows, which is a reference to the movie Carrie. I don't know how many people have seen it, but there's the scene where she's going to the prom and her mom is very frustrated with her and the dress that she's wearing, and she's like, I can see your evil pillows.
Oh my goodness, that's right, I remember it.
So, as soon as she said going to the prom, I remembered it.
Yeah. So, I know. It's her, it's just a funny... It's just a funny joke.
I can see it also being an in-joke for trans women and transitioning, and if their families hate it. Yes.
But I love my evil pillows.
I know. You should do. You paid enough for them.
I know, I did. They were really expensive. Anyway.
But totally worth it.
Yes, totally worth it.
Yes, but we're not doing any calls for actions for anyone to go and get expensive evil pillows.
No, I don't recommend that.
So... I've totally lost my thread of what I was going to talk about because we got focused on the evil pillows. So tell me a tiny bit more about your band.
Okay, yeah. The other gimmick.
Yes.
The other gimmick is that we all rotate on all of the instruments and the vocals. So there's three of us at the moment, and we all have songs where we play the drums, the guitar, or the bass. Right now... All of the songs, I'm the vocalist. We have one song in the works that we're hoping to record soon, and that one will have another one of our bandmates, Ingrid. She will be singing on that one, and I think personally that one's one of my favorites. But that's just because I get to take a moment to rest my voice and hear something different. Focus on something else.
And those of us who are in the studio are getting to see Anthony clutching his face with joy and at the awesome idea of doing that. But even he doesn't have a microphone, so he's having to do a perfect mime over there. And those of us in the studio could hear him say that he wants to join the band. So I don't know if you're taking applications, but we can talk about that during this short break for a station announcement.
Hi, all. This is Leslie Pories, Vice President of the Board here at KKFI. I want you to consider becoming an active member here at the station. Active members are the people who volunteer an average of 4 hours a month. And when you become an active member, you have a vote on all the major decisions of the station. Community radio at its best. We only fulfill our mission of serving the community when it reflects your voice. Come on down and get involved.
The 28th Annual Unplaza Art Fair, starting at 10 a.m. Saturday and Sunday, September 22nd and 23rd. This benefit for Peaceworks KC features 100 local artists and takes place at Southmoreland Park at Oak Street and Cleaver Boulevard. More info at peaceworkskc.org. This message a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
And welcome back to Every Woman. We're here in the studio with Athena Horton from Louise Hyacinth Productions and Robin Nazarian, who's playing the role of a trans woman in the show coming up next week, Mirrors.
I had one more question for Robin. Has this experience really created a fire in you after working with this whole team to do more acting roles in the future?
It has, actually, right. So like I said, this is my first role other than my survival role, right? So I've been very, very interested, actually, after this in and continuing to act. And I talked to the writer, Caitlin Gould, about in the future. I was like, what is your plans? And she's like, well, we're still figuring that out. But she did say that she was going to keep me in the loop. That way, if it worked out that way, then I could potentially be in the actual show, which would be very nice.
That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know that.
We get carried away sometimes.
So, Athena, where can people find more information about your shows in general and particularly next week's performance?
So you can check out our Facebook page. It is www.facebook.com/ Louise Hyacinth Productions. You can also check out our website, louisehyacinthproductions.com. Should I spell it?
Maybe. Yeah. Just in case.
Okay. It's LOUISEHYACINTH Productions.
And I know we said earlier that that's next Saturday. I believe it's 2 o'clock.
Yep, next Saturday at 2 o'clock.
And what's the location?
It's going to be at Plan B at B House. So that is 208 West 19th Street, KCMO. And if anyone was at our fundraiser last night, it's the same location as our fundraiser.
Cool. I hope that went very well for you.
Thank you.
Now you're just running for once or...
Yes, so we're just going to do the show once. Okay. I can talk to Caitlin in the future, and we may like do more if she makes final like more edits and she wants to see more again.
I hope so.
We can totally do that.
It seems like the sort of message that, you know, a lot of people can't make it one night. Like, I don't think I could make it.
Yes, because we'll be here at the radio station.
But it seems like the sort of thing that's really powerful and should be out there with more exposure.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to do more nights, but mm-hmm. just financially, you know, venues are very expensive. But yeah, I think it would be awesome to do it another time.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. Being selfish, I'd like to go and get to see it and see you all.
I'm excited to see it. I'm in it.
So, do you have plans for the future for what might be your next thing to work on?
So I don't have any like brand new project that I'm working on, but right now I'm raising funds to get a clean version of my original musical toured to high schools, and I need to figure out where to make cuts because it's like a 2.5-hour show, mm-hmm. so it's full length, and I don't know how many schools would allow a 2.5-hour assembly.
I guess it depends on how much swearing is in it. That could shorten
well,
it drastically.
I thought there was a lot of swearing, but I worked with the composer and like she cut out all the swearing, and it was like it wasn't that much. So I actually felt pretty good about that.
It's tricky to do it and keep the scansion in the verse. And
yes, it is.
And that would be to partake beneath the skin on the road, basically.
Yes. Yeah, I would like to take it to high school specifically because the onset of mental illness happens in late adolescence and young adulthood. So I think it's really important for people to, one, hear the message that it is absolutely okay and encouraged to go see someone if you're struggling, but I also want people to be able to recognize certain signs and symptoms in friends and family members and themselves, and just be more aware, you know?
So they can get help sooner or at least be able to deal with it and go, okay, I understand what's happening.
Yeah, or even just be a support to someone that they know is going through that, whether they're in denial about it or not, you know? They can still offer some sort of support, which would be wonderful.
Yeah, I have friends who have depression and they rarely take antidepressants because they don't like how they make them feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people might not want to support people like that because they would say you're choosing not to treat it. But if they're not being themselves anymore when they're mm-hmm. on the pills, someone definitely should support them and encourage them and be there for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you knew you were going to say something.
And depression and other mental illness is very undiagnosed or underdiagnosed, mm-hmm. especially at high school and junior high levels, where people, even people that really care and really feel like they are connected and listening to the youth, can pass it off as, well, it's just, you know, a case of being a teenager and everything. Yeah. And all teenagers are carving things into their arms, right?
And the symptoms are often different between males and females.
Yeah.
And people are finally starting to recognize, like, the high-functioning depression as still being depression and still needing treatment and support for the person.
Yeah, that was always me. I was always in leadership positions and all through college, and I was involved in a ton of things, and I always put this smile on my face and I was energetic and all this stuff. But you know, when I was finally at home by myself, I just, like, I don't know, I felt paralyzed because I'm like, I was putting on this show my entire life, you know.
You just kind of, it all comes crashing down at you. And sometimes if I have to really force myself to be super hyper energetic, or even in some cases almost try to force myself to be somewhat masculine at work or in a stressful situation, I come home and I'm just like, okay, I'm going, it's 6 o'clock, I'm going to sleep.
It's wake me
up tomorrow. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of people wear masks at the very least.
Yeah,
that's true.
Have you been able to get some grants to help you for your goal? I think your goal is to tour in May of 2019.
Yes. So I'm still in the process of writing some grants. I am involved in way too much.
So, that high performing thing.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm still in the process of writing grants. Luckily, I have a brother who writes grants for a living. So I've been getting some really cool tips from him. But we also have a fiscal sponsorship, Fractured Atlas, where people can donate straight through them as well.
That's awesome. Are you actually a 501c3?
I am not a 501c3. I do have my business license. I'm working toward being a 501c3. I'm just, I don't think I'm at the stage yet where I want a board just yet.
Yes. We have a board here, and we're both on the board, and there is a lot of steps and a lot of note-keeping and records involved.
Mm-hmm. You're telling me I'm the president.
I know, Madame la Présidente.
Yes, don't you forget that, First Lady.
Do I have to start wearing jackets that say, I don't care?
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Okay.
I think that's a firm no on the jackets. Well, would you like to say one last thing before we need to end for the day, whether it's telling people again how to find you and about next week, or a recommendation for people if they've got
your website address and, you know, when your show is coming up here next Saturday?
Yeah, so the show is next Saturday, September 15th at 2 p.m. It's Plan B at the B House, 208 West 19th Street, KCMO. You can check out our website, www.louisehyacinth.com, or our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/LouiseHyacinthProductions, and find more info. And also, if you are wanting info about how to get some resources, we are going to be providing some eating disorder resources at the stage reading. And we will also start, I think I'm going to update our website this weekend so we can add some eating disorder references there as well.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And did you want to say anything quickly?
Just about Evil Pillows. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, and we're a lot of fun, so check us out. Also
sounds
the play.
Like it.
Well, I'd like to thank you both, Athena and Robin, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Please join us next week on Every Woman, where we will be talking about the Unplaza Art Fair. And my thanks to our guests and to my co-host Una, to Anthony on the soundboard. And please stay tuned for Donna Wolf coming up next, and then Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.